Welcome to Orphans No More, a media extension of Justice for Orphans, a ministry dedicated to rally the church for the cause of the fatherless, inspiring, educating, and equipping believers to care for vulnerable children, and supporting those who have heard and heeded the call of James 1:27. Here's your host, Sandra Flack.
But to all who believed him and accepted him, he gave the right to become children of God. They are reborn. This is not a physical birth resulting from human passion or plan. This rebirth comes from God. That is John chapter 1, verses 12 and 13. I am your host, Sandra Flack. Back on August 12th, I had the privilege to interview adoptive mom, Catherine Piper. Catherine co-authored the book, Hope for the Adoption Journey, with 27 other adoptive moms, each one sharing their own stories of struggle along the adoption and foster care journey. And I am excited to have with us today another one of the moms who shared their story in that book. You can find the book, Hope for the Adoption Journey, on Amazon.com. So joining me today is adoptive mom, Lisa Strutz, author of chapter 9 from the book, titled Healing Rain. Welcome to the show, Lisa.
Oh, good morning, Sandra. It's so good to be here with you this morning.
Well, it's an honor to have you on the show. I've just really enjoyed talking to each and every one of you moms that contributed to that book. But here today, we're going to be able to really dig into your story and you're be able to bring us up to speed, because your chapter that you wrote was really only a snapshot in your whole story.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so I'm thrilled to be able to give our listeners more of the story and even what you're still walking out today. So you and your husband, Sean, are parents to three older biological kids and one younger son adopted from Burkina Faso in Africa. So Daniel is your son. So share with us, what led you to adopt Daniel?
Yeah. Well, Sandra, my husband and I raised our bio kids in northern Wisconsin, and we had attended the same church for a lot of years. It was kind of a large church, and just had the privilege to get involved with some mission partnerships with my son's birth country in Burkina Faso, and had taken several trips there. And through that, was part of an organization within our church that looked at partnerships with different ministries that were going on in his birth country. And so as I sat on that mission board, if you will, they asked me to kind of look into an organization called Sheltering Wings, and just kind of see if we could do any partnership with them. They did orphan and widow ministry. And, you know, at the time, you know, we were comfortable. There's no other way to say it. Our bio kids were, growing up, they were healthy, they were adjusted, they were attached. And so, you know, life was good. And, adoption was not on our radar, at all. But through, kind of this partnership, they would, the orphanage that Sheltering Wings, was part of, they would kind of send through profiles of kids every once in a while, and we would just pray for them as a family. But it was, you know, we were comfortable. We were sitting in our pews, and of course we prayed for them. But it was just, we were naive. And so, one day we were at a track meet for my oldest son. And it was rainy, and we were miserable. It was not a proud mom moment at all. We were kind of scrolling through my phone, just looking at emails and social media, and my son Daniel's profile had come through. And you know, I kind of looked at it, I smiled, I acknowledged it, but to be honest with you, was not in a place where I was really absorbing it. And my son, Carson, looked at the picture and just stopped me and said, Mom, who is this boy? And I said, well, honey, you know, he's one of the kids at the orphanage, and, you know, he's waiting for his family. And my son just said right away, he should be my brother. I want him to come home. And I just kind of smiled again. Was not, you know, we're at a track meet, and any mom who sits through sports in northern Wisconsin in the spring or in the fall can relate. It's cold. And so, we talked about it a little bit, and I just said, you know, we'll pray for him when we get home. and then he just didn't let it go. And so when we got home, he started telling my husband about it, and we read my son's profile together. And my husband, who is a pretty stoic guy, just began to weep. Mm. And we just knew that God was doing something. And so later that day, I shot out an email. And you know, Sandra, I'm typically the driver in our family. I'm kind of the crazy, and my husband's the calm. And but we just couldn't let it go. And so I shot an email off to our missionary friends that were in Burkina, and I just said, hey, you know, our family just has a heart for this boy, and how can we help you advocate to find a family for him? And she emailed me back right away and said, Lisa, why not your family? And when we began to pray about that, we didn't have an answer for God to say no. We couldn't come up with any reason to say no at all. And our hearts just began to really grow for Daniel. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that was kind of our point where we stepped out and just said yes. So wow.
I love that. Yeah. Every story of God moving on hearts to bring children home is always such an amazing God story, because as the scriptures tell us, God sets the lonely in families. He's already got this plan, and we just need to sort of catch up with him, you know?
Oh, so true. So true.
So I want to hear the story, because you brought Daniel home in 2015. He was 12 years old. Is that right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, before traveling to Africa, you were told he had some vision problems. So what was meeting him for the first time like? Tell us about that experience.
Well, you know, I mean, I think most of us can say this as adoptive parents. You know, we go into these things knowing that we shouldn't have any expectations. We, you know, thankfully had some good education ahead of time, and we had surrounded ourselves with some other adoptive families, and so we knew we kind of knew not to go into it with expectations. However, we had I think I'd shared with you this the other day that I am a recovering control freak. and so I had my plan. I had everything in place for my son to come home and just have these resources around him for his vision impairment. And we lived in a very rural area, and so had even just kind of tried to navigate what that would look like, you know, teaching him how to just kind of grow up and live independently in this area. And would we, you know, I mean, just had a plan. I had a plan. And really the only thing that our son had requested we bring for him was a soccer ball. And so when my husband and I got there, we actually showed up to meet Daniel for the first time on my birthday. And there was just all this anticipation, just kind of waiting for him to come up. And so when he got there, you know, even though I knew not to, I threw my arms around him. And he kind of just stood there like, who are these people? And then just quickly like realized that we needed to just kind of find something to break the ice. And so we were playing soccer with our son, and my husband and I kind of looked at each other and we said, wow, you know, he really doesn't have vision impairment. And we had been told, you know, that our son had no education really prior to us getting there. For a few short, you know, for a very short time, he had attended a school. It wasn't a good experience at all because he was just so far behind. And so we kind of had all these hopes then at that point that, you know, his vision really wasn't what they had said it was. And so we were going to just bring him home, and we were going to get education, and we were going to love him, and we were going to nurture him, and maybe go see some eye doctors, and we were going to get a pair of glasses, and that was going to fix everything. Mm-hmm. And I laugh now because I think, oh, what the Lord has taught us since then, and what Daniel has taught me since then, Yeah, we've learned a lot, but in transparency, that's what it was like initially. So
yeah,
and we do. I remember traveling for the first time, you know, to adopt our first 3 children internationally, and because we already had 4 kids at home, you know, we felt like, oh, you know, we know how to do this parent thing.
Yes.
And miraculously, the transition went relatively smoothly. So several years later, when we returned for a younger sibling who was 5, we felt like, oh, easy peasy. Last time we did this, we brought 3 non-English speaking kids. Now we're only bringing home 1 little 5-year-old. This will be easy. And It was the hardest thing we'd ever done. You know, we just we knew what we were doing. And clearly, we had no clue how to really parent a child with trauma issues. And so, you know, it's a humbling experience, but the Lord always provides, you know, those resources and the things that you need along the journey.
Yeah.
And he's with you in it, but it's not easy. Just because you can parent, you know, a whole bunch of biological kids doesn't really mean you're well equipped to parent kids from hard places, as we call them. So with that, Lisa, what was life like when you brought Daniel home?
Yeah. You know, it's funny that you say that about, you know, how hard it is, because I just had some notes jotted down here. And for this question, I wrote down hard. You know, it was hard, Sandra. And the thing is, initially when we brought him home, I didn't feel like I had permission to say that it was hard. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, having walked along some other families now, I think that that's a pretty common thing. You know, when we brought our son home, we had this village around us, behind us, in front of us. You know, there were just people that felt so connected to Daniel and his story and our family, and they had done life with us with our other children. And so I felt this sense of I had to suck it up. You know, I felt this sense of, you know, all these people, you know, what would they say? Like, if we, you know, they helped us so much bringing him home and they supported us. And then if I said it was hard, you know, and then there were the people that I worried would say, I told you so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and certainly that's pride, but, it took a long time for me to be able to say, to be able to just be authentic in that and say, like, this is hard. Daniel also comes from a trauma background, quite a bit of it. And, you know, I'm so thankful for the work of Karen Purvis and TBRI. We read that like it was our Bible, at that point, just craving
yes.
knowledge and wisdom. Yes. Like, how do we
That's
navigate
true.
This?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And so, yeah, just can't say enough how thankful I am for people who have gone before me, to be able to share what, you know, what helps and what works and kind of how to navigate all of that. And so God has just really given me a heart to be able to go ahead and share that as well, with the ones coming up behind us. So, yeah.
So your family struggled, your marriage struggled, Daniel struggled, you know, and you had shared with me that really, about 2 years home with Daniel, you begin to realize that, you know, his learning challenges were not really improving. And a lot of that was tied to that roller coaster ride to find an accurate diagnosis. So share with us that whole part of the journey.
Mm-hmm. Well, so initially, as I had shared, initially when he came home, we thought he had vision impairment. And, you know, we kind of went through that part of that segment of the roller coaster of, you know, kind of bracing ourselves for the challenge of that, but then kind of coasting down and saying, okay, we've dodged that bullet. And then when we got home and we started going to eye doctors, we had an eye doctor who said, first of all, let's just back up and say, you know, when our kids first come home and they come from trauma, my son didn't speak any English at all when he came home. And me being the control freak that I am, dove right into doctor's appointments. We just dove right in. And it was, that in itself was traumatic for him.
Yeah.
And which in turn was traumatic for us. So we went to an eye doctor, and then they said, your son, yes, he can see, but we think he has glaucoma. Mm-hmm. And so we thought, okay, all right, so we'll go to a specialist for that. We went to a specialist. They said, no, it's not glaucoma. Your son has a degenerative, kind of a hereditary disease that he will lose his vision completely. He's just in the course of that. So then here we are kind of, at the bottom again, just feeling like, oh, okay, we need to go back to plan A. Then we went to a specialist for that. And they said, no, your son has lazy eye. That's it. There, of course, is a big long word for that I can never pronounce. But we felt relieved again. We felt like, okay, there's hope. And they had said, no, he doesn't need glasses. If he had been, born in the U.S. with resources and was able to kind of have this corrected when he was young, we would have been good to go. But, this is just kind of, he's over 8 years old and we just can't really do anything about it. And so we thought, okay, good enough, right? I mean, it's just lazy eye. And so we're going to just continue on with trying to get him educated. Now, kind of like you had said, the first 2 years we had to sit and kind of sort out what is lack of education? What is language barrier? What is trauma? What is attachment? We just kept trying to put the puzzle together with kind of not a lot of luck. And so then my husband had to take a job transfer down to Missouri and from northern Wisconsin. And so we went to this little sleepy community that didn't have a lot of resources, but had a huge heart. And they welcomed us. They made us, socially, my son thrived really well there. And so even though we didn't have really a lot of answers medically, we felt like socially he was getting what he needed. And so we kind of coasted for a while. I will tell you, through the frustration of all of that, my marriage did take a hit. I don't know if I'm being transparent, Sandra. It's still hard some days. My husband and I are still trying to figure out what life looks like now moving forward. But then while we were in school, we had to kind of fight through the system of, proving that Daniel just continues to have challenges. We knew in our gut that it was much more than, just a language barrier. We knew that there was something else going on. And so finally, in this little school district in Missouri, they just really believed in Daniel and believed in us and said, yeah, we're gonna fight for you. And they did. And so we had all the testing done through the school. And, again, the impulse in me to be in control of everything, I marched into that IEP meeting and sat at the table with six people around me, and I was just ready to take on whatever they gave me, and we were going to fix it. We were just going to find the magic solution to get my son the resources that he needed. And I remember these people just all kind of looking at me around the table, and I could tell by the looks on their faces that they were just going to give me information that they didn't want to give me. You just know.
Yeah.
And so there was this woman from the state who just kind of leaned forward and said, finally, when she could tell that I just wasn't absorbing everything, she said, I want you to know that your son will likely live with you the rest of your life. Like, his IQ is 40. We've done several different types of testing. He has an intellectual disability, and I just want you to hear what I'm saying. I want, how does that make you feel? And I remember just crying. I remember sobbing and leaving and just thinking, well, I have no control over that, And yeah. Lord, what are you doing? This is different than we signed up for. Now, I won't ever say, like, there's never been a day of regret bringing my son home, never. But there's been a lot of confusion along the way and really just, questioning, like, Lord, are you sure that we're equipped for this? And so then, moving forward, Sandra, even with the intellectual disability, my son just kind of has these things, you know, he's real rigid in his schedule sometimes, and just kind of had these, you know, these social things that just weren't connecting. And so we were grasping for straws. And so we decided to go see a neurologist over in Kansas City to just explore the idea of a brain injury. When we got to the neurologist, he kind of shined a light in Daniel's eyes, and right in front of him turned around and looked at me and said, "I don't know why you're here." He said, "You brought this kid out of a third world country, and I'm not really sure what you expected." Mm. And devastated, just wow. Devastated. I mean, I just wow. took Daniel home, and we said, "That's it." You know, it made us very reluctant to reach out for help anymore. I felt like I was crazy. Like maybe I was just, again, trying to control the situation too much, or maybe just not, like, maybe I needed to just accept where Daniel was at, and then time would just take care of it. But you know, a mama's gut just knows. And so then we decided to go to an autism center, because it was the only thing, you know, late night Googling. Yeah. It was the only thing that I could come up with that. And we just knew that we needed more help around us. You know, it was just becoming increasingly difficult, and we knew we needed help. We needed resources. And so we waited 8 months for an appointment, and went to an autism center, and after a full day of testing, they said, yes, your son has autism. He's on the spectrum. And so then here we are in the roller coaster again, you know, and relief, right? I mean, we have the diagnosis. So now we're going to get help. Now we're going to get answers. And, you know, well-intended, but our family was in transition yet again. My husband's company transferred him back up to Wisconsin, really by our choice. My husband's job wasn't thriving in Missouri. And so we decided to make the move back up here. Our two older girls are in Wisconsin, and so we welcomed kind of the opportunity to be closer to them. But once we got up here, we enrolled in a larger school district. Mm-hmm. And my son runs cross country and track. It is kind of the only thing that we've been able to find where the playing field is kind of level with his peers. Mm-hmm. He's almost 17 years old now. He is. Yeah. He's 6'3", just this gentle giant. We just adore him, but he runs track. And so we had gotten an appointment for just a routine sports physical here. Went in for the sports physical, and the doctor just pulled me aside and she said, "What's going on?" And you know, that's how the Lord shows up, Sandra. Yeah. You know, when we're not expecting it, when we're not forcing it, when we're just quiet and we're in a place where we can hear it. And boy, he showed up so big that day. When I started explaining, you know, some of our challenges to the doctor, she said, "We really need to get you in with a neuro in Madison at the University Hospital." And I was reluctant. From all of our experiences before, I had shared them with her, and she said, "You know, if you just trust me, I really think it's going to be worth the time and the drive to go." And so we did. And my sweet Daniel went through all these tests willingly. And we just knew by the end of the appointment that we finally had found somebody to listen. And so the doctor just looked at me and said, "Your son doesn't have autism at all. Your son has a brainstem injury." Mm. And he said, I'm pretty certain of it. And so we'd like to get an MRI and confirm that." And so, you know, to be continued. But it's been a roller coaster, you know. It is kind of these ups and downs. And for Daniel, I think it's been just as frustrating for him, because he's aware that he has kind of these challenges. But he also has just the sweet innocence about him. And so he's kind of trapped between, you know, being this 17-year-old boy physically and intellectually, you know, anywhere between 5 and 10 on most days. And so Yeah, that's been, you know, it's been kind of our journey. I know, again, we still haven't gotten off the roller coaster.
Because your most recent diagnosis, when you finally got real answers about it being a brainstem injury, was just a couple of weeks ago, correct?
Yes. It has just been recently. And actually next week is when we go for our MRI to kind of confirm where exactly the injury is and what part is affected. So we're still in that place.
Yeah. So your family, Lisa, has gone through so many struggles, as you've been sharing, over the past 4 years since bringing Daniel home, job changes for your husband, moving, you know, these things are difficult to deal with, and you didn't always feel God in the midst of it all. You know, sometimes we don't, and we wonder where is he? So as you've walked through this journey, just being obedient and adopting and stepping out and really walking this out, what have you learned in your relationship with God?
I think the most important thing that I've learned, Sandra, is that God's grace truly can be guzzled, like you're taking it out of the end of a hose. Mm-hmm. I think that, man, he has just been faithful even when I haven't. And it is true that, you know, we haven't always felt his presence. I mean, you know, even with this last move for us, we've gone from, you know, we've always had our own home kind of out in the country and place for our kids to kind of, you know, go and just be outside. And we have had to, in this move, kind of we're in the process of selling a home. And even that, like, you know, in a market when it's good, I'm a real estate appraiser. Our home is not selling. It's just not selling. And we've had to just trust God with that too, you know? Obedience isn't about what we feel and don't feel. And I think that's been the most important thing that I've learned, that it, you know, we really have to just continue to step forward. And God doesn't, I mean, there's just story after testimony after testimony in the Bible that just talks about, you know, the Lord saying, hey, I'm going to send you here. And he doesn't always give the whole plan, you know, he's always faithful. And, you know, just this morning, you know, my husband and I are getting ready to head out of town here for a few days to just connect and spend some time together with some friends. And there's so much that goes into that, you know, just preparing Daniel's schedule. And and I was rushed and hurried this morning. And, you know, just Daniel in his sweet way, you know, just told me, he said to me this morning, this is just a snippet of Daniel. He said to me this morning, Mom, I wish we had robots that did everything for us. And I said, oh, Daniel, no, it wouldn't be good to have robots do everything for us. And he said, but Mom, look at all these humans. He said, they just look sad and tired and crazy.
Aww, very observant boy.
Oh, he's so observant. And it just made me just step back, you know, and say, oh, like, what am I reflecting to him? And so he was helping me this morning, you know, just fold some laundry. And, you know, when I was just telling him, I said, Daniel, like, God is so good to me. Like, I'm so thankful that, you know, that he gave you to me. And I'm so thankful that I get to be your mom. And it just was a reminder to me, you know, just from that verse that you read, you know, in the beginning there, John 1, 12 through 13, it was just a reminder how much God loves meeting my needs as well, and how much he loves being my father and caring for me. And so just like I can't always tell Daniel or my other kids for that matter, the whole picture sometimes, and I need them to just trust. Boy, God has just taught me a lot about walking forward in obedience with him.
Yeah. So now you mentioned you have three grown bio kids. Your daughter Alex is 25, Bailey is 20, and your son Carson is 18. How has all of this journey affected them?
Oh, yes. Yeah. So, you know, initially when we were bringing Daniel home, just like when I was expecting them and I was carrying them, you know, there are always other moms and other people that love to kind of share the good, the bad, and the ugly, what it's like to be a parent. And we kind of had that as well when we were bringing Daniel home. We had well-intended people who kind of love to, I maybe not loved is not the right word, but they felt compelled to share horror stories, you know. And one of the just kind of recurring things is people would say, aren't you worried about what it's going to do to your children? And I just want you to know, like, for, I don't know, for your listeners, I want them to know bringing Daniel home has changed my children. But, you know, my oldest daughter, she is our fierce leader in our family, and so proud of her. She has always been the kid to kind of fight for the underdog, but at 25 years old, you know, she is married and really could be living just a very comfortable life herself, but she is serving as a CASA volunteer for a couple of sweet kiddos in foster care, and just, you know, coming alongside their family, like, you know, having her brother home and just having just a picture of what trauma, how it can change somebody, has just made her want to kind of fight for these kids, you know. And then our daughter Bailey, who just always was very much into science and loved animals, and you know, she would kind of joke about, you know, enjoying spending time with animals more than people. she has just become her brother's you know, biggest advocate, and she took a job. She's in college, majoring in psychology. She took a job working through the Y at an after school program with kind of some inner city kids that have experienced a lot of trauma, and she just pours into them. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'll tell you, Sandra, when Daniel first came home, culturally, he struggled with Bailey because Bailey was at home. Alex was already out on her own, but Bailey was at home, and she, you know, culturally, girls don't have the same value in his country. They don't. And so he really struggled with her being the older sister, mm-hmm. and having to take any kind of direction from her or really respecting her. And so she kind of took the brunt of that from him. And so instead of becoming angry with him or kind of a recluse, I just watched God equip her.
Wow.
You know, to just show just continued like compassion and unconditional love to him. And so you know, so he's changed her as well. And then our son Carson, you know, he's not working as a CASA volunteer or inner city kids. He had shared a story with me just a few weeks ago about a gentleman that he had encountered through work, and this guy kind of said, you know, just very ill-informed and had some, I mean, dare I say, some prejudices, but he said to our son, you know, about Daniel, he said, yeah, you know, a lot of those kids, a lot of people like that, they don't want to work. Mm. And my son just, he just stood up and he said, my brother is the hardest working person I know. My brother would love to have a, you know, a job full time. And my brother is always willing to help others. And my, you know, like, how dare you, you know, place that stereotype on him. And so, like, I've watched God fill his heart with compassion too. He's kind of a stoic guy like his dad. And so, kind of wears his feelings more reserved, but, I don't know. I've watched my kids change, but in every good way. And I know that's not everyone's experience, but man, I'm grateful. Like it has just been sometimes the encouragement that has kept us going.
Yeah, that is awesome. Yeah. How is Daniel doing now? You said he's 17, and is he still running track, and how is he doing?
He is running cross country, and you know, Daniel is doing good. We worried so much through all of these transitions that our family has been through, just wondering like how that was going to affect him. You know, of course there's attachment issues, and like I said, he's pretty rigid in kind of his schedule and kind of where he places things in his room, all of that. But I'll tell you, like, in a way that only God's grace could, it has made Daniel attached to us more so, because we are his home. And that's kind of what we've talked about through all of these transitions. And so, you know, Daniel is in such a better place. Daniel handles disappointment better than he used to. He is kind of the life of the party when he walks in the room. He's doing well. I mean, again, he probably asks me 10 times a day about his future and what that looks mm-hmm. like. We still have, you know, little things like, gosh, where, you know, we put our shoes in a basket outside of our door. Daniel always will take his shoes and put them way away from ours. You know, Daniel has only ever initiated affection from me or like a hug from me one time that I can recall in the 4.5 years he's been home. He still will kind of tense up sometimes when I touch him, and you know, it's a lot of push and pull. But you know, again, by the grace of God and just a lot of other good adoptive families coming around us, he's really adjusted as best as we could ever expect. So
that's good to hear. Lisa, as we wrap up, what is on your heart that you would really like our listeners to take away from our conversation today?
I think the biggest thing is, you know, just, man, there's so much, but I think just learning how to, I just want to encourage listeners to lean into trusting God, you know, just the way that he provides. You know, I had shared with you when we were bringing Daniel home, we had gone through kind of all this fundraising and, just kind of the sweet time of fellowship with the Lord, like, you know, just really trusting him every step along the way. And then when we were, just sending in the last payment, to our adoption agency, they filed bankruptcy. And, you know, at that point I could not see a way out of that. The agency was the only one at that time that we knew of that had a protocol to help bring our son home. But, you know, before we could even bring our disappointments to God, he already had a plan in motion for that. And we couldn't know that unless we continued to walk forward in obedience and trust him in that. And I just want to put a plug in for Show Hope. Like, so excited. They stepped up in such a huge way for us when Catherine Piper had reached out and asked if I would be willing to kind of be part of Hope for the Adoption Journey. And we talked about kind of giving the proceeds of that back to Show Hope. Man, I just felt so grateful to God that like he was opening an opportunity to be able to give back to that agency. And so Show Hope stepped up for us, and they reached out to the Tim Tebow Foundation on our behalf, and Tim Tebow stepped up for us. And so the Lord he had provided, he had made a way for us before we could even ask. Our friends and family who had invested in helping bring Daniel home prior, they didn't question. They just stepped up again. it was just incredible just to see how God had provided. And so, you know, as we've moved forward, Sandra, through this journey, and again, we're still on it. There are days that I wake up and my faith is just so thin. And I just think, I don't know, Lord, how you're going to provide for this situation. But I just want to encourage, like, just the way that we pour into our children. And again, just going back to John 1, 12 and 13, just the same way that we pour ourselves out for our kids every single day, even when there's just nothing left, you know, the Lord is pouring into us if we let him. And, you know, just resting in that, just that obedience. Yeah.
And just so our listeners understand, when your adoption agency went bankrupt, all of the money that you had paid them for this adoption and you were at the very end of that disappeared. It was gone.
It did. Mm-hmm. It did. So, it was all gone. Mm-hmm.
It was all gone. So to have Show Hope step in and the Tim Tebow Foundation step in, and then friends and family that had already invested and that money is gone, they stepped up again. So mm-hmm. God definitely provided. We know that when he calls us to do things, he equips us, and he does you know, the scripture says exceeding abundantly beyond all we could mm-hmm. ask or imagine. And sometimes, you know, what we're asking for, what we're attempting to step out in faith and do, we can't even imagine how we're going to be able to do it. And then God steps in and does something, even something more extraordinary that only he can do. And then our faith mm-hmm. grows because we get to be part of that when we step out in obedience. So, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and for being so transparent, because we don't ever want to make it sound like, you know, go adopt kids and then you'll be doing a good deed and then we're all going to live happily ever after and, you know, la-di-da, because the reality is this is messy, this is hard because you're stepping into messy. But Christ stepped into messy for us, and it is all a part of adoption. And I appreciate your transparency because we want our listeners to know, you know, we need to be obedient and we need to step out and we need to care for orphans and vulnerable children and foster kids. It is not easy. And really, it's something only God can do. And say yes, he does it through us. And we grow closer to him in the process. And we get to experience really miracles of God that we wouldn't have experienced if we just stayed in our comfy little place and stayed safe, tried to keep ourselves safe.
Yes, I am so glad that you brought up that point, because that is so true. Like, we can miss out on God's blessings by staying in a comfortable place. Yes, like, yeah, there's too much to share in a half an hour podcast for sure. Yeah. But yeah, thank you so much.
Oh, again, thank you. And I want our listeners to know that you can read Lisa's story along with those from the 27 other adoptive and foster moms who share their beauty from ashes stories of adoption and foster care in the book Hope for the Adoption Journey by Catherine Piper. You can find it on Amazon.com, and all of the proceeds from that book go back to Show Hope, which is Stephen Curtis Chapman's adoption ministry, and they give grants to families for adoption, and they do a bunch of other great stuff too on the behalf of orphans. But it's definitely, the book is worth the read. I devoured it this summer, and now I'm having the privilege of connecting with some of those authors. And you also get to sew into Show Hope at the same time. So thank you again, Lisa.
Thank you. God bless.
Thank you. And thank you to our listeners. If you enjoyed today's show, you can find more episodes of this podcast on our website at justicefororphansny.org. It's also on iTunes, Google Play, and Podbean. Just search for the show by name, Orphans No More. And be sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Justice for Orphans. JFO is a Christian nonprofit ministry on a mission to inspire, educate, and equip the body of Christ to walk out James 1:27 in whatever way God calls. To learn more, to contact us, or to donate online, go to justicefororphansny.org.
Thank you for listening to Orphans No More, for sharing what you've heard, and praying for vulnerable children everywhere. We hope you are inspired to walk out James 1:27 in whatever way God calls you. For more information, visit justicefororphansny.org.